this week's sportscaster is, well, she's a New Zealander, but she's actually in Great Britain right now, Ricky Swinnell, on the line from London. Kia ora, Ricky. Welcome back to Nights.
Kia ora, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you? How's London this morning, your time?
Good. It's beautiful, actually. I must say, London has London's weather has vastly improved since the last time I was here, that's for sure. It's been a lovely couple of days here. I tell you what, it's almost like being spat out into a whole new world of being back in a city like this after a long time.
Yes, how are you coping with the crowds?
Yeah, no, it's good. Do you know what? Probably the fact that I got COVID a couple of weeks ago has probably helped in that I'm much less paranoid than I would be had I not had it, because there's no restrictions, no masks, or very few masks. No social distancing, anything like that. It's like the city has sort of come back to life and everyone is getting straight back into it. So, yes, I think, yeah, having got the COVID, having had the COVID, almost makes me feel a little bit more relaxed about the whole thing.
What are the sporting fixations in Britain right now?
Well, it's, we're getting to the end of the Premier League football season and the European football season, so you can imagine that absolutely dominates everything. It's a love-hate relationship, but the British press and their newspapers are quite something else, which I have been gorging on the last couple of days. And so it's, if the sports section's 15 pages, it's probably 10 pages of football and then a few other bits and pieces. So, the Premier League title race is certainly on. The Champions League is away. Lewis Hamilton, the Formula One driver, he's an enormous star here, obviously, and his woes in Miami yesterday or overnight are a big deal as well. And then, yeah, I guess, you know, we're not far away. I'm sure they're probably starting to whip the cream and cut the strawberries, because we're getting to that time of year, and it is a great time of year in the sports scene when you get to the likes of Wimbledon coming along and the big cycling tours underway and all of those sorts of things.
Now, one thing you might be able to cast some light on, because you're on that side of the world, is a story that surfaced over the weekend that former New Zealand cricket captain Brendan McCullum was one of the candidates to take over coaching the English cricket team. I think their one-day cricket squad. Has that been getting much coverage on your side of the world? I would have thought so.
No, yeah,
really?
Interestingly, no, and I didn't see it. There's a lot of, obviously, interest in the cricket because New Zealand is due to play here, like the Black Caps are on their way sort of thing. They play at Lord's in a couple of weeks' time, so I expect that the cricket side of things will ramp up. There's a lot, cricket-wise, around Ben Stokes, the New England captain, and I think that is probably dominated. But, yeah, I think I read about Brendan McCullum from reading stuff back home, you know, keeping in touch with most people. I don't recall seeing it here. It's funny when you're trying to keep up with all sorts of news in a couple of time zones. But I would imagine that will start to bubble away a little more, as the Black Caps get over here and as they look more sort of fixated on that cricketing summer, which is not far away.
It would be kind of ironic if Brendan McCullum ends up coaching the English cricket team, and the captain is also New Zealand born, Ben Stokes.
Yeah.
And this is the team that denied us at the last World Cricket Cup by the length of, well, by the number of boundaries that went over the rope.
Yes, exactly.
Yep. Mind you, those, not that I'm not that I'm bitter about that. That's the rules that they had at the time. If we had won, they would have been saying that it was hard done by. So there you go.
Exactly. Yeah, it'll be an interesting one to see that pop up. And as I say, there will be some pretty intense scrutiny on the, because England cricket's in a bit of a state at the moment with their men's side as well. So that's where once the football is done in a couple of weeks' time, there'll be huge focus and attention will go on. And as I say, the Black Caps are going to be right in the eye of that when they come to play at Lord's in a couple of weeks.
Did the Women's World Cricket Cup get much coverage, or were you not in Britain at the time of the final, which was between England and Australia?
Yeah. I was still back home, but I do know, like, I do a couple of things every so often with the BBC radio stations, and I did a couple of different slots with them on the Women's Cricket World Cup. So it's interesting seeing, you know, where they sort of are placing a lot of women's sport here. There's been a concerted effort by some of the papers and in some media circles to really make much more of an effort. Over here in the UK, there's a lot more resources that the Women's Euros, Women's European Football Champs are being held here in a month or so's time too. They get underway as well, and I think that will be a pretty intense focus on that too. But yeah, so you know, anecdotally, as I say, I wasn't here at the time during the World Cup. Anecdotally, it seemed to pick up a bit of coverage for sure.
Who are the powerhouses in women's football in Europe?
Yeah, well, they just had the Women's Super League just finished up yesterday, actually, in Chelsea. Chelsea won that in terms of club football, headed by an Australian, of all places. But England has, in the last, probably since the 2015 Football World Cup, Women's Football World Cup, where they got the bronze medal, I think they were third, that they've started to put a lot of resources. But you'll see, you know, France, incredibly strong, Sweden, very good, you know, and these are all teams, of course, that will be coming to New Zealand next year as well when we will co-host the Football World Cup. So I don't think we quite know what's coming for us when that tournament happens next year.
Well, before the women come to play football in New Zealand in the World Cup, they'll be coming to play rugby. And yeah. The form team at the moment would have to be England, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, massively, yeah. And the Women's Six Nations has been on. Well, I was actually in Canada before I came over to the UK, but was sort of keeping an eye on what's happening in the Women's Six Nations. And I was talking to catching up with a Kiwi friend over here who's involved in, or he's in rugby, and he said the change has been massive in the last couple of years on the focus on the England women and the resources that have been put in. So they'll be overwhelming favourites, I would have thought, going to New Zealand later in the year for the Women's Rugby World Cup.
I saw them play France at the end of the Six Nations, and I think they were dishing out some, I think, against Ireland or something. It was 70 points difference between England and Ireland. And I mean, the French, who also beat the New Zealand women's team when they were touring in that rather ill-fated tour where New Zealand lost three games, and now they've got got a new coach and they've got a new captain, all sorts of new things. But England would never look. France never really looked like beating England. They're English, those English forwards, they're a mighty pack at the moment.
Yeah, and France is a quality side. They are a really good team. They won the Six Nations a couple of years back, and they've got a core of players plus some new young ones that have come in. So France are very good. So the fact that England could go to France and beat them the way that they did, pretty handsomely, says a lot about how far ahead and just how much class and quality England women have, and how hard they will be to beat when they come down home in October.
Ricky, do you know where they played in France?
Oh, I want to say it was in Bayonne, off the top of my head, somewhere around there. They play a lot of rugby down sort of in the southern region. Mm. We're actually heading there in a couple of weeks. We've got the World Seven Series tournament, which is being played in Toulouse. So it's very popular down sort of the southwestern side, down from Bordeaux. And I feel like that game was in Bayonne, just off the top of my head. But the French rugby crowds and they're getting massively behind their women as well. We saw that when the Black Ferns played there last year. And it's what I love about those French crowds is it's men and women, it's young and old. They just want to go and watch footy, basically, and they get well and truly into it.
They do. There was, it was a real crowd atmosphere there. I also thought wherever it was, it was a lovely part of the world. It was often these sports stadiums are in industrial areas, but this was sort of, you could see some of the houses around. I thought, this looks like a nice neighbourhood.
I must investigate exactly. Yeah. I feel like I want to say Bayonne, but I might have to swing by and check it out.
So do you think New Zealand, now that it looks like there's this whole renewal thing going on with the New Zealand women's team, the Black Ferns, that they have a chance? I mean, they will be at home.
Yeah, look, they've still got a chance. There's still quality, and they've been, given a couple of the best coaches going around. Any program in the world, England men, the Springboks, if Wayne Smith became available to coach them, they would say yes. And that is what the Black Ferns have got. And then Alan Bunting, who's, of course, the former Sevens coaches, who've been brought in on that cultural team side, you will never hear anybody say basically a bad word about the guy and the way that he is able to bring a team and the work he can do to bring a team together. So they've been, they've got that out of, a pretty difficult and nasty time. And, so it's now obviously on that coaching staff, but on those players to get, to front up and get themselves and be ready. They're getting test matches coming up soon, which is great, against Australia and Canada and the USA. So, yes, they have a chance, for sure. You know, New Zealand rugby, we're still quite good. But England, as I say, overwhelming favourite.
Why is it that at the moment our sevens team, which won the gold at the Olympics, that doesn't transfer to the 15-a-side?
Very different games, sevens and 15s. And you know, a lot of players who come through only play sevens. And that to try and translate that to 15s is very difficult. So, yeah, you know, that they are huge, different games. The sevens program has had a lot of resource and investment put into it because it became an Olympic sport, whereas, you know, women's 15s has always been a bit of a poor cousin for however many years. And it's only really now, and I think it's been bubbling along, that the tour last year to the Northern Hemisphere wasn't the catalyst for some of the changes we've seen, but it was certainly the kick up the bum that, you know, we have fallen behind England, who, after the 2017 World Cup, where they didn't win, where they lost to New Zealand, they heavily resourced and started to put some effort into their women and into their women's 15s program. And on the flip side, they have, I mean, not completely flagged their sevens program, but their sevens program is very under-resourced. So, you know, they play on the World Series. So it's, I guess it's the different priorities of the unions.
Watching that game the other day between arguably the two best women's 15-a-side rugby teams in the world at the moment, France and England, it struck me the English were a smarter team. The French had some chances, but they didn't spin it wide when maybe that might have had an impact. They kept it tight, and I thought, well, this is probably what the English want. They want it close and tight because they've got such a good forward pack. I did also wonder whether England relied a little bit too much on the rolling maul. You know, maybe are there other tricks to their game? Because if it's just that, I mean, you might need to run the ball a bit more out there in New Zealand.
Yeah, well, I mean, every team in rugby, men, women, whatever level, super rugby, international women, everybody's relying on the rolling maul at the moment. There's been I noticed a bit of chatter about that over the last few weeks as well, because it is effective and it is hard to stop, and when you've got a forward pack as good as England. But don't let that sort of fool you, because, you know, when they played New Zealand last year, you know, they were scoring some very good tries as well. The French women, I mean, everything you know about the French men's rugby team, you could probably translate to the French women's team, the French sevens team, men and women. You know, they are the French. You just don't know one day. You know, they go absolutely hell for leather at everything. One day it comes off, other days they're like, no, it's not going to work. You know, that is French rugby. It's the beauty of French rugby. And in fact, French rugby is on a massive high at the moment. And obviously they host the Men's World Cup next year as well, and they will go into that tournament as favourites, undoubtedly. One of their club teams, Toulouse, had an incredible win in the European Champions Cup the other day, and a game that actually went to penalty kicks, which I have never seen before in a rugby game, but they had a kick-off to win it. So, you know, French rugby is really riding high.
Did you think that kicking off business worked?
Well, I mean, they've got to settle it somehow, right? And they, you know, they'd played the 80, then they'd gone through extra time. So, I mean, for tension and drama, it's never a way to stop it. And I mean, probably the same people who say a penalty shootout in football is it doesn't work, or it's a gimmick, or it's unfair, or whatever. You know, you've got to find a way to win, and it's better than a toss of a coin, and it's better than watching, you know, for another 20 minutes of teams who are, and guys and girls who are absolutely shattered, keep going.
Ricky, it's been great talking with you. Enjoy that London spring weather. I'll let you get out and enjoy it now.
I will. Thank you so much. Nice to chat.
Thanks, Ricky. That's Ricky Swinnell, our sportscaster, who, surprise, surprise, is in Angleterre on the other side of the world in London. Next week's sportscaster, I think it'll be Peter Lamp, talking to us from the mighty Manawatu, Palmerston North.